Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Crushing Depths by Danny Petrie. They know the power and peril of the ocean, but as they get closer to the deadly truth, an even greater danger lurks just beneath the surface. When an accident claims the life of an oil rig worker, Coast Guard investigators Reese Dawson and Mason Rogers are flown to the scene 38 miles from shore. Tensions aboard the rig are high, and the death has everyone on edge. Environmental activists are threatening to do whatever it takes to stop the plague on the environment from continuing its work. Meanwhile, rumors are circulating on board about an ancient curse lurking in the depths below. Mounting evidence shows the death might not have been an accident. Was the man killed by one of the activists, or more frighteningly, a member of his own crew? Reese and Mason have to sort through not only numerous suspects, but also their own haunted pasts and their attraction to each other. Just as the case seems about to break open, worse news arrives. A tropical storm has turned their way. Now they're cut off from any rescue, right where the killer wants them.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today I'm talking with Danny Petrie. She's the author of 11 books and a couple of novellas, and I am so glad we get to talk about romantic suspense. So welcome to my program, Danny.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So we're recording this in a time when we're still social distancing, although hopefully by the time this airs, we will be back to normal. Yes. So I have to ask, because this is a curiosity to me, do you have more time to write or less time to write?
You know, that's a really interesting question. You would think it'd be more, and for some reason I feel like I'm writing slower. You know, Everything seems to be kind of moving at a lower pace, and I'm also have a book deadline at the pretty much the same time that my book The Crushing Depths launched. So I think trying to kind of juggle those things and just focus, I think that's what it is. It's I'm having a hard time focusing and kind of really getting absorbed in the story. So I do have more time because I'm not out running around, and I have several autoimmune issues, so I'm considered high risk, so I haven't been in any stores or anything like that. So I'm having more time to do it.
Yes, but you're not having
my focus is just going slower, and I'm like, this is not right. But I have a lot of author friends who said the same thing.
Yeah,
said they can't write at all, and some are like, yeah, it's just going slow. And then there's others that are like, I finished it in 3 months, and I'm like, oh my goodness.
And you don't want to hate those people.
No. Well, happy for you, really.
Well, I just feel like I've seen so many Facebook memes and stuff. Oh, well, now you can write. You have all this time. Yeah. I'm like, who are these people?
I know.
I mean, do they have no life?
Yeah.
Was their life all outside? I mean, in my household,
right.
We have, you know, I have 5 kids here now. And
oh, wow.
4 of my own and then a preschool foster daughter. And, you know, not like I have to, because most of them are old in high school, middle school, and upper elementary. So it's not like I have to do a lot of hand-holding for the schooling once that all got straightened out. But it's still like they're always here.
Yeah.
there's always something
true.
To do. So.
Right. Absolutely, yeah. There's still always stuff to do. My kids are grown, and I have 2 grandbabies, and so thankfully they're very close to us, and I'm still able to see them, which is great.
Yes.
But yeah, no, life keeps going on. I mean, there's bills to pay, there's lots of stuff to do, there's a house to clean.
Yeah.
There's just stuff going on, you know, that you kind of have to take care of, so...
Well, and then I think that, well, this is an extraordinary kind of outside circumstance. There's always those times when it is harder to write.
Absolutely. This is why, you know, many times people are like, oh, I want to write a book. And you ask them, and 10 years later, they're still on that first book.
Yeah.
And they're not very far on it as well. So do you have anything, in case we have some inspiring or people who are stuck? I hate to use the word writer's block because I'm not sure that that's the right term.
Sure.
But do you have any, how do you get yourself motivated to write? It's not that you don't know what to write for the story. That's writer's block. But just that, I don't really feel like writing.
Right. So a couple things that I do that have been helpful is, the biggest one is honestly writing first thing in the morning.
Mm.
Since, like I said, my daughters are, you know, grown and all that. But I used to have a little bit different routine. I used to get up and exercise and have my Bible study time. And, you know, I would check email and I would end up getting distracted. So by the time I sat down to write, my mind was kind of going all over the place. So a friend suggested, first thing when you get up, just grab breakfast and start writing. And I found if I do that, it's really helpful because then nothing else is kind of weighing on my mind, and I write for a certain amount of time, and then I, you know, take a break and have lunch, and then the afternoons I use for marketing time or research time or anything else that might need to be done. So I think finding what the most productive time of day is for you, I always write better in the morning. And a very good friend, Becky Wade, she writes best in the afternoon. So she kind of has the flip-flop schedule that I have. We kind of are just the opposite. And I think every writer, really, if they can figure out when they're most creative and productive, and it takes trial, you know, by error, but that is a really big help. Deadlines help a whole lot. Motivate me. That's a big deal.
Great motivators.
Yes, very good motivators. And actually, another thing, I do host a retreat for a group of aspiring authors, and the same group came back this year. And it was interesting because we decided to do a writing sprint. Jody Hedlund talks about writing sprints, and she'll, like, set her timer for, let's say, 15 minutes, and she'll write as much as she can. And then she'll do it again, trying to get more words. And I thought it was such a good idea, so we actually, during this, since we can't see each other, we actually did it over Zoom. Like, we all met, we all set our goals for the hour, and then we just wrote, and then we would say if we met our goal, and we did it for about, crazily enough, about 4 hours.
So
we were on the Zoom call forever. But, you know, it actually was really motivating to see other writers, you know, working. And I think that can be helpful, too, you know, having a writing buddy or somebody that understands and, you know, you guys can hold each other accountable in some ways. So,
yeah, those are great tips. So thank you for sharing those. And I agree with you. I mean, I have to write first thing in the morning, although I have to get up and exercise because I can't eat breakfast first thing. I don't know why.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I exercise and then I get ready and then I sit down and I don't even check my email. I don't open it. The only thing I open is Microsoft Word. That's why I write in.
Yeah.
And then I just write.
Good.
And that's been helpful. Although, again, there's been days, you know, where I've not been able to do that for various things. And so I just recently started setting a goal a couple weeks ago. Of trying to write something every day. And if I can't do it first thing, then I at least I open that Word document first thing. And so it's up there taunting me all day.
There you go.
That has been more helpful because the more familiar you are with your story, even if it's only 10 words, I count myself as having done it, even if I only write 10 new words, because, you know, that's writing something. But it does help you, I think, help keep you going and not editing while we write, right? I mean,
right. And it keeps you in the story, like you're saying.
I think,
you know, when you take, like, I know sometimes I'm writing and go to the beach or something. Oftentimes I write a lot at the beach, but there are times when we're on a family vacation and I take the whole week off, and then it takes me, like, days to get back into the story. So that's really smart of you. I think that's really helpful to motivate and to, you know, keep you close to the story. That's Stephen King, I believe, talked about that. He writes I think I want to say 2,000 words every day, like every single day. Mm. And he was saying how much it keeps him in the story, you know, it keeps it alive in his mind.
Right.
And, you know, I found the longer I have a break from it, the harder it is for me to get back into it. So that's a really good thing, trying every day. And you're right, it doesn't matter. You know, on some of the days, like, I kind of have, like, a page goal for the week, but even if you just get up and write 10 words, you're still writing. That's a really great thing. I think that's awesome.
Hey, I used to do word goals for the day,
mm-hmm.
And then I realized I was just getting depressed. Because in this new normal we're having, just in this new normal, you know, that,
sure.
You know, our preschool foster daughter is no longer going to daycare, so, you know, she needs supervision during the day,
right.
And I can't always, you know, my kids have school, and anyway, so just those kind of things, just general life things. I realized the word goal wasn't important, but having, you know, the goal of, you know, at least writing something every day. And
absolutely.
You know, for aspiring writers, you know, before I had contracts or deadlines, I'm a writer by trade, so I mm-hmm. love deadlines. They're like my favorite thing in the whole world. I know, I'm crazy. it's okay, I've had to, you know, I always back everything up. So I would create deadlines for myself just for my fiction writing, or things would never get done. So that's,
sure.
You know, and I would make them kind of, you know, as realistic as possible, you know.
Yep.
For
absolutely.
You know, and to give yourself those little extensions when you need them, but for the most part, kind of saying, yeah, I want to have this rough draft done by X date, and
absolutely.
Then I want to have this, and then, you know, put it on your calendar, make it real, because you can't just start writing to deadlines, you know, if you've never tried it before. I mean, it's
right.
I would think that would be hard to
make sense. I would think that would be really hard too. Yeah, I always. Before I was published, I always set a time, like a date or a month, you know, I want to be done by, like if I was, you know, writing it early in the year, I want to be done by August. Or I remember a lot of times I want to be done in time for ACFW, you know. And so, yeah, just setting a deadline. And really what you're doing is writing consistently. You know, if you're showing up every day and you're writing something, even no matter how small of words or, you know, 10 pages, it does keep you in that routine of writing's important. And I think the more that you kind of build that routine makes it a lot easier when you transition to publication and having deadlines.
Yes, yeah, definitely. So how many books do you try to write a year?
I normally had been writing a book every 9 months. Due to health issues, this year I went to a book a year.
Okay.
Which gave me more time to play with the story. And it's hard because there's things that I like about both time frames.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely a slower writer. And, you know, when I was doing a faster pace, and sometimes I would be every other season. So, like, 1 year I would have one book due in the summer. The next year I'd have two due, one in spring and one in fall, and then the launches for both. And so once a year is a pretty good pace for me, and I really like it. And I have several friends at Bethany House that do write one book a year, and I think that's kind of helpful to know other people do that too.
Right.
It's not
just
me that writes slow. So yes, usually one book a year, and then sometimes a book a year and then a novella.
Yeah, well, that makes me feel better, Dani.
That was good.
You know, when I write, I'm not slow, but it's just, you know, lately life has just been life, and, you know, and so you feel like, oh, man, I should have had this book done, or, you know.
Right.
So,
right.
And just that reminder that, no, it's okay, you need to find your own pace, and, you know, stick with it.
Yep, absolutely, and I mean, like you said, you have 5 kids, and it's, you know, a different season of life right now for you, so, especially with obviously the pandemic and everything. So, yeah, I think it's good to have a goal like of writing every day, but not be hard on yourself if things don't work out, you know, because it's not normal circumstances.
Right. And so let's switch topics a little bit because I'm curious about this and we only have a few more minutes left. So your latest series, and with Crushing Depths is the latest one in it. They're in the water. They're some Coast Guard characters and things like that. So how do you research that? Do you have like someone in your family or
right?
Cold calls to the Coast Guard. Hello.
Yeah. it's really funny, actually. I spoke with a number of my readers that I know well, and you know, after the series was announced, and people kind of had an idea I was going to be writing about Coast Guard Investigative Service, and really wanting the Coast Guard, you know, everybody in the Coast Guard has different experiences, but there's kind of an overall camaraderie. My husband was in the Navy. There's a set field of the Navy. My brother-in-law was in the Marines. There's a set field of that. And so I wanted to not just focus on the investigative service agents that I've written about, but in the Coast Guard as a whole. So I put out in my reader group, the call that if anybody had a Coast Guard member in the family, if they would be willing to chat with me. So I ended up having 4 different Coast Guard guys, speak with me, and I could email. The one was like, I forget where he was, so he couldn't talk by phone, but we emailed back and forth quite a bit. And it was really cool because one of the guys was very newly in. One of the guys had just retired, and the other two were kind of in between. So I got to hear about the different places and that they served and the different jobs they did. And so that was really, really helpful. And then, you know, there's some Coast Guard movies and documentaries and, you know, videos. And so that is pretty much how I researched that aspect of it. For diving, my husband dives. He was a diver in the Navy, and he still loves the scuba dive. So any diving questions, I ask him.
Great.
And the book is centered around a oil rig platform. And so that one was interesting. So I did a lot of research with books. I did a lot of research with documentaries. My husband, based on what he had done in the Navy, had a fair amount of ideas of how production would work and basic mechanics and stuff. But then, the rest I was able to kind of just immerse myself in it in, you know, videos and books and movies. It was really fun. I really love research, and it's great because I love it so much. But the downfall is I'll get, like, so focused on it that I'm having so much fun that I'm like, okay, I have to stop and write the book.
There is that. I have a friend like that who's been researching. She writes, you know, she just researched around the Civil War for historical books. And I just, sometimes I'm like, you know, you actually need to stop and write. I always tease her about that because she's like, and I found this. I said, is it going to fit in your book? And I'm always teasing her about that because it is hard. I mean, I love history as well, and research is fun. But it is hard just to make yourself write. I always have questions in my first draft, you know, so to not let myself, because those rabbit trails on the internet is wonderful in a lot of ways, but my goodness, it's a time suck.
Absolutely, I kind of know my limit, like, okay, it's enough, I need to stop. And I actually, in the first draft, I just kind of highlight where I know I'm going to need to do research, and I just keep going. And then when I get to, you know, what's I consider my second draft, then I go through and fill in the research on that. But I'm kind of doing it in the background a little bit each day.
I mean,
I usually spend a little time at the beginning doing it.
Because there's some things that you really kind of need to know so that you can even write halfway believable characters.
Absolutely. That's so true. You have to know the setting. You have to know their profession. You know, there are some things you really do need to know. But you're right. The rabbit trails, those are the ones you got to kind of not go down.
If you can You can at all help yourself. Well, this has been delightful, Dani. So, unfortunately, we're at the end of our time, so we're going to have to stop talking.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I've been talking with Dani Petri. She's written 11 books, and her latest is Crushing Depths, and you'll get to hear an excerpt in just a minute. I hope you join me next time.
Now an excerpt from Crushing Depths by Dani Petri. Wrightsville Beach, North Carolina. Reese Dawson sat at the long table on Dockside's waterfront deck, gaping at Mason Rogers. He turned to look at her, his green eyes illuminated in the bright pole lights lining the wooden structural beams. She averted her eyes as heat rushed up her throat, spreading across her cheeks. He'd caught her staring again. Embarrassment drenched her. It had been 3 days since his arrival, and she still couldn't wrap her mind around the fact he was actually sitting next to her. The boy she'd had the biggest crush on as a teen was back in her life, and on her Coast Guard Investigative Service team. He handed her the basket of hush puppies the restaurant served instead of bread to start everyone off. His hand brushed hers with the movement, and her heart fluttered. Thanks, she said, keeping her gaze fixed on the red basket as she pulled two balls of fried cornmeal from it. She plopped the still-warm puppies onto the round plate to the right of her Coke. Get it together, girl. The whir of a boat's motor dropping to an idle sounded over the deck's edge. A teen jumped out of the white outboard and onto the pier, tying her up to the cleat. Reese loved living in a place with a boat drive-through. Noah raised his glass of iced tea.
Everyone?
The team lifted their glasses in response to their boss's prompting. Noah dipped his chin.
Welcome, Mason. Happy to have you on board.
The team clinked their glasses together, even Caleb, who sat brooding to her left. Observant as he was, there was no chance he missed the way she looked at Mason. In recent months, he'd developed feelings for her, so it wasn't surprising he'd bristled at Mason's arrival, especially after learning she and Mason shared a past, though he didn't know the half of it. Only that they spent time in a children's home together for a handful of months as teens. The opening riff of Sweet Home Alabama emanated from Noah's jean pocket. He hitched up as he extracted his phone.
Rowley, he answered. Yes?
Standing, he headed down the ramp towards the restaurant's pier.
Rockfish tacos, the waitress said, placing the plate in front of Reese.
The sweet, tropical scent of the mango slaw swirled in the air. The waitress handed out plate after plate to each of them, setting Noah's burger at his spot while he continued to pace the pier. Caleb bit into his Carolina barbecue pork sandwich, the scent of vinegar wafting in the night's gentle breeze. Finn Walker did the same with his crab cake sandwich. He and Noah, who was from Maryland, had argued for months over which state had the best crab cake. Finn had been convinced it was North Carolina, right up until Noah had crab cakes flown in fresh from Jimmy's Famous Seafood in Baltimore. It took two bites for Finn to concede the win.
Sorry about that, folks, Noah said, retaking his seat.
Everything okay?
Emmy Thornton asked. Reese looked forward to seeing the quirky angel every day at the station.
Reese, Mason.
Noah lifted his chin in their direction.
Got an assignment for you.
Her and Mason? They'd worked a case his first day on the team, but Finn had joined them for most of the investigation. This would be the two of them. Alone. A mixture of elation and fear sifted through her.
Great.
Mason set down his lemonade.
We've got a death out on the Dauntless. The offshore oil platform?
Mason asked, swiping a drop of lemonade from his bottom lip.
Stop staring, girl. So he's jaw-dropping gorgeous. So you share a past. Still, staring is plain rude.
Despite not having a mother to teach her, Reese knew, or at least had come to learn, her manners.
Noah laid his napkin across his lap. You two need to determine if the death was an accident or if foul play was involved. Kilo is leaving from Texture Oil's copter hub in 45. I need you both on it.
Mason pushed back from the table.
No problem. Great, Noah said. You'll be joining the head of operations, a commercial diver, and the deceased's replacement on the company copter.
Reese took one last bite of her taco before setting it down. She dabbed the corner of her lips with a napkin. They aren't wasting any time in replacing the deceased.
The deceased's name is Greg Barnes. I talked to the head of operations, Bob Stanton, and he said they needed to replace him ASAP.
Must be an important position. She reached for her glass and took a final sip.
You'd think, Noah said. But Bob said the main reason they need to replace him fast is they've been working with a skeleton crew.
Mason's brows pinched as he stood.
Why? Several guys didn't show up for their 3-week rotation transport out, Noah said, popping a fry in his mouth. I know why they didn't show up for that copter ride out there.
Tom Murphy leaned toward them from his table situated to their right.
Why?
Mason asked, moving around to the back of Reese's chair. He held it out for her as she stood. She glanced over her shoulder at him and smiled. Thanks. He nodded. Tom, one of Wrightsville's most colorful fishermen, crooked his index finger, drawing them in.
That rig's cursed.
Cursed? Caleb chuckled. You can't be serious. Tom waggled his finger.
It's no laughing matter, young man.
I'm sure it's a good story, Tom, Reese said. No reason not to be polite. But I'm afraid we've got to catch a copter ride. Tom shrugged and turned back to his food.
It's your lives at stake.
What do you mean? She asked before they passed his table, unable to stem her curiosity.
You'll see.
He smiled, his right incisor missing.
Henry's curse is real.
Henry? Why was she letting herself get sucked into this? Tom let out a high-pitched chuckle.
You'll learn all about Henry.
Shall we? Mason said, gesturing to the wooden ramp leading down to the gravel parking lot. Excusing themselves, they moved down the ramp. Mason leaned in. He smelled of the ocean and warm spice. He whispered,
Did that guy seriously just cackle?
She nodded, strangely curious about the old man's ghost story.
I thought people only did that on Scooby-Doo.
She let out a slip of laughter.
I wouldn't be laughing,
Tom called after them as they rounded the ramp on his side of the deck.
You two be careful out there, you hear? It's a dangerous place to be. Just ask the men on board.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.